Becoming a mother is one of the most exciting times in a woman's life. Go Healthy for Good will help you learn what you can do before, during, and after pregnancy to give your baby a healthy start to life. Hello, welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Nerida and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is live every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Go Healthy Live and our website is hopetv.org/gohealthy. Now that you're pregnant, taking care of yourself has never been more important. So it's crucial to arm yourself with information about the many ways to keep you and your baby as healthy as possible. I have two wonderful guests with me today. They'll be sharing their expert advice with us. We want to be a part of this wonderful time in your life. But first, let's meet Akilah as she shares her own story.
I am pregnant for the fourth time now, carrying my friend's baby. 7 years ago, a girlfriend of mine kept miscarrying. So she asked, you know, would you mind being a surrogate for me? And my husband and I talked about it, and I said, sure. I mean, I had enjoyed being pregnant with mine. In fact, I was even going finishing nursing school being pregnant, you know, and I managed fine. But then she did a procedure, and she never really needed me as a surrogate, and I never thought twice about surrogacy again. And then last year, out of the blue, I could not remember my password to my Gmail account. And everything that I thought was my password was not my password, and I couldn't get it going. So I had to use my junk email account. I hadn't checked that account in, I don't know, at least 6 months, maybe more. And when I was looking into that account, this friend, this mutual friend, emailed me and asked if I'd be willing to be a surrogate. I actually was excited because I was going to be pregnant again, you know, because I had enjoyed being pregnant with my other children. And there's just something wonderful about being pregnant, being able to feel the baby move inside, feeling life. It's an awesome feeling. I will admit I hate the labors, but then some people would say, well, you could go to the hospital and have an epidural and it'd be a little easier on you. But I am a total advocate of home births. And with finally the third one, my husband was brave enough to get in, and the midwife just told him what to check for. And he delivered our third child. And that's another thing, is I have a great spouse. I don't know, just that is huge. And having that love and that security. Your body releases hormones, you know, if you're mad, if you're sad, if you're angry, and it affects the child in utero. And so having support at work, having support at home, I think it really impacts the unborn child.
Joining me today is Dr. Alan Handysides, an OBGYN specialist and pediatrician with many years of international experience. Also, we have Sherilyn Gibbs with us. Sherilyn's an RN with solid experience as a midwife. Welcome, Dr. Handysides. Welcome, Sherilyn.
Thank you.
Good to be with you.
Dr. Handysides, tell us, should a woman see a doctor before she gets pregnant?
It's a jolly good idea.
Really?
Yes. Because, you know, there are many things that can be found out by a pregnancy visit that can cause reduce a lot of problems. For instance, let's say they check you and they find that you are not immune to German measles. Well, you could get a vaccine before you became pregnant, and that way you wouldn't have to worry about your baby being malformed because you caught it during the pregnancy.
And that's quite a common t- type of measles that recently there's been an outbreak.
Measles used to be one of the major causes of blindness, cardiac defects and so forth. The other thing that is very good to look at, especially today, and depending on where you live and depending on the prevalence, but you need to be checked for an HIV infection, because a mother who is pregnant with HIV, she can be treated in such a way that her baby has much lower risk of ever contracting the disease. Just the same way as we've always tested for syphilis by doing the VDRL. The other thing is, it's a good time to check up on your weight, your blood pressure, if there's a problem there, kidney function. You want to just see that you're doing things just right, and diet and so forth. Those are all very good things to check with your doctor.
Right, because once you're pregnant, it's like, that's it. You can't go back and change any of those.
Even your blood group may be important.
Right. Yeah. Sherilyn, in terms of nutrition, healthy habits, supplements, what else might a woman think about prior to pregnancy?
Well, one thing that's very important is the folic acid vitamin. It's a B vitamin, and we've found that when you take this at least 400 micrograms a day, that's what's recommended, a month before pregnancy, that you can reduce your risk of neural tube defects up to 70%.
Mm-hmm. So a lady would want to start that several months, well, when she first starts trying to get pregnant, wouldn't she? And just continue, because you can't predict when you're going to
get pregnant. And you can't always know when you're going to get pregnant. So to take that much every day is a healthy habit for all women in childbearing years.
Right, and then she'd take that through till what number of weeks?
Well, it's important, especially early in pregnancy, through the first trimester, but we, you know, recommend that women take prenatal vitamins through their whole pregnancy. And even a little bit after pregnancy, especially when they're breastfeeding, as long as a woman is breastfeeding, I recommend that they take their vitamins.
Okay. Excellent.
Canadian Medical Journal, just on October the 2nd, was talking about vitamin B12.
Yes.
How important that is.
I was reading that today.
Yeah, for pregnant women and for infants. And if you're a vegetarian, as many of us are, and you're going to think about a pregnancy, it's very important to supplement with your vitamin B12 as well, because the vitamin B12 is required to actually let the folic acid have its full effect. So I could see that it would be important to take B12 as well.
So, it's
so before pregnancy, it's good to find out if you're deficient in B12.
It would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm. So the folic acid and the B12 are both important to reduce the neural tube defect.
Well, I can't say that I have evidence of that, but the folic acid we do know, and because B12 is important for the functioning of folic acid, it's interesting to put the two together.
But there's a recent study that they just were talking about that kind of sheds light to that it's important.
It's important for the function.
Yes.
And they've done studies on many, many vegetarians, and they find that maybe up to 7-8% of vegetarians are deficient in vitamin B12.
Yeah. And I found a lot of my meat-eating patients are deficient in B12. So it's something that I'm prescribing a lot of in my practice.
Yeah, and that's because, you know, the absorption of vitamin B12 is dependent on the intrinsic factor coming from made by the parietal cells in the stomach. And as we get older, when you get to my age, I wonder sometimes whether my absorption of B12...
I'd be very worried if you got pregnant, Dr. Handyside.
Well, so would I. My wife would be even worse.
Yes, she would. She would. But, you know, another thing is, I come from New Zealand, big agricultural country, and our farmers are now supplementing our dairy cows with B12 because there's actually a deficiency amongst basically all of life.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Very important.
Now, speaking about babies forming and neural tube defects where the spine, let's have a look at a graphic of embryology, and let's look at how early development actually happens.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So here we go. This is a little clip about it takes 40 weeks to make a baby. That's right at the end, but let's go back to the start. One egg.
Look at the sperm. Well, I don't know if our viewers can see it, but there are sperm crowding around there like crazy.
Yeah.
It's a miracle, you know. As soon as one gets in, there'll be a thickening of that egg, so only the one gets in. Two cells there, starting to be three cells.
So week two, this lady doesn't even know she's pregnant yet.
No way. No.
Yeah. There.
Week four, that's from the last menstrual period. That's probably 2 weeks after conception.
We've got a heart, we've got a nervous system already
forming.
Look
at the formation there, the folding, there's the cephalic portion and it's folding. The neural tube, you see, has already formed
there. Yeah, it's stripped down the back.
So that's why they need the folic acid so early, because by 6 weeks it's already there.
Yes.
Yeah. There we look at the eye and the baby there with the hands.
We've basically got all the bits, haven't we? Look at the hand,
oh, it's
the
fantastic.
Eye, the brain.
What a miracle,
there.
Eh?
Look at that.
And I can't understand how people think this just happens by chance, that all of us exist because of chance. I mean, this embryology is so precise, so absolutely
oh, look,
important.
12
look
weeks, we're already doing our exercises. We've got
yes.
muscles.
Muscles.
We're moving.
Movement. Look at that little hand there.
14 weeks.
Fantastic.
This is amazing.
Yes, amazing.
So by then, your folic acid's done its work.
Yeah.
You could actually stop it without it impacting
the neural tube, yeah.
Neural tube
but,
anymore.
But then there's the development of the brain as well. We want
that's
that to be good. Look at the lips and the nose. Man, it looks like he's just got his dad's nose. And that big toe.
Yeah.
Sucking his thumb.
Sucking thumb. We often see that on scan. We can already tell whether it's a boy or a girl if we wanted to know. And babies actually have hiccups. We see babies
yes,
have hiccups in
just
there.
Like I do now.
But this baby could be born and has a chance of survival. Week 24. That's the earliest, really, that there's a reasonable chance of survival. But now we're into maturation. So all
yeah.
the bits are there. We're just maturing. This baby would definitely survive born. 90-95% mm-hmm. chance. And it spends lots of time sleeping. Whoa! There we are. We jumped right to the
He's
end.
He's come right out. Yep.
Yes, we well, have.
She has. I'm not sure.
So, Sherilyn.
Yes.
If we just saw how early everything is in place and then it's a long period of maturation. What does that tell us in terms of drugs, like social drugs, prescription drugs, illegal drugs?
You know, when a baby's forming and they're exposed to these substances, it can have very harmful effects. It can cause them to be small, so that they don't put on the weight that a healthy baby would. It can affect their brain development, and it can cause problems for the mom. It can cause increased risk for preterm rupture of membranes, preterm delivery, which is a huge problem. And then, you know, we see babies that are born to moms that are addicted to substances like heroin, and then the babies have to,
have
to go through withdrawal. And it's such a sad process. We had two babies in the nursery the other night where I work, and the babies were going through withdrawal. And they were just screaming, and they were just so, you know, restless.
Agitated.
And so what they have to do is they have to gradually withdraw them. They put them on the morphine drops and gradually withdraw them. And it's a very painful process to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what has to be done.
Yes.
So there are a lot of effects of these substances, and so we encourage our moms to not do any drugs.
Stay clean.
Not use tobacco, no alcohol, because that will bring the healthiest pregnancy.
So we're thinking caffeine, alcohol, nicotine, and then the street drugs and prescription drugs. Well, today we're talking about pregnancy, and I have great experts with me today who want to share some more tips on how to have a healthy pregnancy in just a moment. But first, we'll join Justin in the kitchen in just 60 seconds, so don't move, we'll be right back.
Looking for ways to put the fun back into your marriage?
On today's episode of Family Talk, we'll talk about how to nurture fun and friendship in your marriage without breaking the bank.
Is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of the wicked. For the Lord God is a sun and shield. The Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing does he withhold from those whose walk is blameless. Lord Almighty, blessed is the one who trusts in you.
Welcome back. I'm here in the kitchen with my friend Justin,
hey.
Our chef extraordinaire, and yes, just like you at home, this is one of my favorite segments. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you.
What have you got for us today?
Today we are making sweet potato souffle.
Ooh, I can smell Thanksgiving coming.
I know, I can't wait. We're going to get a little early preview tonight.
So nothing like practice will be perfect by Thanksgiving, hey?
That's right. Okay, so sweet potato souffle. 4 medium sweet potatoes, 1 tablespoon of ground coriander, 2 teaspoons of vanilla, 1/4 cup of soy milk or nut milk, 2 tablespoons of honey, 1 tablespoon of light molasses, and 1/2 cup of chopped walnuts.
Nice.
Those are tasty sounding ingredients, aren't they?
Sounds very yummy, huh?
Yeah. Okay, so it's pretty simple. We're going to put the sweet potatoes in a bowl, put the other ingredients in a bowl, mash them together, put them in the oven.
Sounds simple.
Yeah.
Sounds simple.
So let's get to it.
Okay.
It's gonna,
did you want to...
I guess we could pre-cut them a little bit there. We've already boiled them.
Now, I guess you can peel it, but do you know that takes away some of the goodness?
Yeah.
So you're probably better to...
I like tater skins anyway.
You like tater skins,
so
yeah.
I like them.
I guess if I was doing it for guests, I might peel it, but... Mm.
Yeah. I think we'll leave them on for tonight.
Oh, do you want to mix this in?
Yeah.
So we've got...
So we've got some ground coriander here.
Oh, that's such a good spice.
I know. Ugh.
Yeah, that's the secret ingredient, that one.
Probably the secret ingredient for just about anything, huh?
Yeah.
We got some honey here.
If you mind need it.
Scooping. Would you mind scooping that out for me?
Sure.
Yes.
Oh, that's a nice light honey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'll keep working on that, shall I?
Yeah. You get to lick the bowl because you're the assistant, okay?
Oh, I thought it was because I had the longest tongue.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Here's some molasses. And it's actually pouring slightly faster than molasses, which is good news for us.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. You want to lick the bowl?
Now, that looks like just ordinary molasses, yeah? You could use light molasses just so it's not so dark and doesn't make such a brown color, but now this must be the vanilla.
Here's some nice vanilla.
Mm-mm.
And a little soy milk.
Now, you could use any milk, right?
Cow's milk,
nut milk, soy milk, whatever.
So goat's milk.
Goat's milk. Sheep milk.
Yeah.
We are getting exotic.
Yeah, pretty much.
And we'll leave the nuts out at this stage.
Yes, we'll put the nuts on later.
Let me...
Now, this is quite the clever contraption we've got here. We're just going to pop this through here.
That way we don't spread sweet potato all over the studio and your camera.
We don't want to get you guys covered in sweet potatoes.
We'll keep that one for April 1st.
Yeah. So if you had a food processor, this might be a good thing to try in the food processor. I'm going to turn the volume on this thing way up. Let's get going here.
Wow, that looks really nice and creamy.
Now, why a sweet potato versus a regular old white potato?
Because we're in America. We're in America.
Okay.
And you guys love your sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
You always have to add something sweet to them. I've yet to work this out.
Yeah.
Back in the old country, we don't put any sweetener in our sweet potato.
Really?
Yeah, we just like it as sweet potato, not sweet potato.
Ah, I see.
But hey, I never saw anything like when I went to my mother-in-law's Thanksgiving for the first time. And I saw you guys put marshmallows on top of your sweet potato. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't sweet enough.
Yeah.
It's got to be double sweet.
But, this looks beautiful.
Yes.
So sweet potato has some beta carotenes in there.
Okay.
So there's antioxidants. And it's a really... nice, flavorful tuber.
Right. Now, is it true that the glycemic index of a sweet potato is lower than a white potato? Why is that?
I understand that's what it is. I don't know whether it's the type of fiber that's in there.
Oh, okay.
But you do get a lower peak, so a little better for diabetics if they don't put all the sweetener in.
Yeah. Keep the marshmallows off, you'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so now we would take this and transfer it to a casserole dish.
Into a little casserole
dish. Put the nuts on top.
Or a souffle dish. You could do individual portions like...
Oh, yeah.
And make little souffles, and that would just sit on the plate. So,
Well...
Yeah. So, sorry, we don't have a dish, and then you'd sprinkle on
just
the...
sprinkle that on top.
But we could just go straight to the really exciting bit.
Yes, this is my favorite part of the segment right here.
Armed.
The tasting part.
Right.
You've got your weapon?
I have mine.
Okay.
Ready?
Let's give this a try.
Let's see how sweet these sweet potatoes are. Cheers.
That is one sweet potato.
That is nice. You've got iron from your molasses, some natural sweetener
iron,
from your honey. And
the delicious flavor of the coriander. As I think we've discussed before, deliciousness is a very important nutrient.
It's
my favorite nutrient.
Your vitamin D, deliciousness.
That's right.
Excellent. Excellent. I like it. Well, let's go back to Kyla and her wonderful story. Watch the second part.
I'm a vegetarian, and I would consider myself a vegan vegetarian. So my biggest concern for me is health. I'm staying healthy, being healthy, making sure the baby is healthy. I've had 8-pound, 8.5-pound, 9-pound babies, all on a vegan vegetarian diet. And I've had people say, oh, you need to eat more protein, you need to eat more protein. I'll eat the way I normally eat. I get a variety of fruits and grains and vegetables and grains. I'm talking about, you know, the whole like brown rice and wheat flour. Not to say that you can't have white flour and that substances like that, but try to just mix it up. And I think there's a lot of misconception that a lot of pregnant women and various people feel that, oh, if a woman is craving something, she should have it, you know, she needs it, whether it's meat or a lot of chocolate or whatever it is. Well, I disagree. You know, you still need to have self-control and temperance, pregnant or not. I remember with my first child, I craved donuts. And every time I go to the grocery store, I could smell donuts. Even if I wasn't walking by the bakery section, it was just donuts were the only thing I wanted. And I refused. I remember purposely going to the fruit section and buying plums, you know, so I could avoid eating donuts. I'll never forget. I mean, I dreamed about donuts. That's how much I wanted to eat donuts. But I didn't give in. I think I was probably the strictest with my first in terms of what I wasn't going to do. I was a lot stricter vegan then too. This one has, I'm still careful with what I eat, but also I am now in my third trimester in the summer and the heat. And every once in a while I've splurged on a non-fat yogurt sundae. But that's really rare because I'm a total believer of preventative medicine as much as possible. The medical industry has its place, but if people can prevent sickness, why not? You know, and if you can help to aid into a healthy pregnancy and have a healthy baby, why not?
Indeed. If you can help, why not? So... donuts. Donuts brings me to an important question, Dr. Handysides. Tell us about weight gain in pregnancy. Does a woman need to worry about
weight
gain?
Well, the best part of the donut is the hole.
I've never found that myself.
Yeah, weight, you know, gain is the nemesis of many women. You get these beautiful young women come in, they get pregnant.
For the first time.
First time, and you say it's going, and then they seem to just throw, you know, abandon to the witch room, and they eat anything and everything, and they just get fat. They don't notice it at first because they think it's the baby. But you know, when the pregnancy's over, they find that they've got 25, 30 pounds to lose. So that's a very, very important thing for a young woman to think about. She must take care of her weight. I would think it depends, of course, what she's like. If she's a bit chunky, you know, sort of like 30 pounds overweight already. She could probably go through the pregnancy and not gain very much at all and come out and she's lost maybe 20 pounds. That would be wonderful. If she's a skinny little malinky, you know, she only weighs 95 pounds and that's, you know, with all her clothes on, she could probably gain much more. You could let her gain up to maybe 20, 22 pounds.
Yeah.
But it really is a question of not letting yourself go. You don't want to end up with a headache. And I've seen people who gain weight in pregnancy and never, ever, ever regain normal weight.
That's actually a major problem. But the other thing about weight gain is the complications in childbirth, isn't it?
I mean,
and in the later pregnancy.
Blood pressure goes up, you know, that can be a problem. Preeclampsia is seen more. Diabetes.
Mm.
Today we have a real epidemic of diabetes, which is all related to being overweight. And pregnant women who show manifestations of high sugar and diabetes in pregnancy, what we call the gestational diabetic, they have a greater chance of having type 2 diabetes when they get into their mature years. I won't say when they get older, but in fact,
within 15 years,
exactly.
There's a 50% chance.
So it's very, very important to be careful about that. In fact, I used to screen all my patients for diabetes about 26 to 28 weeks.
Mm. I think nowadays that screening everybody is a very good idea because we have such high rates of obesity. But, you know, the high weight gives us a higher chance of C-sections, instrumental deliveries, third-degree tears.
And shoulder dystocia.
Shoulder dystocia is a
don't
big one.
Shoulder dystocia. And what a dreadful thing.
We're talking about where the head is delivered and then the shoulders are stuck and the baby can die half in, half out. So that's our nightmare, isn't it, as obstetricians and midwives, yes.
And midwives too.
Yes. We don't want to go there. Now, Sherilyn, what do you as a midwife offer a woman who's pregnant? And when do you like to get involved in her pregnancy?
Well, I like to see them early. When they first find out they're pregnant, if they establish care at that time, they come in and have their new OB visit, we can take a look, we can do a complete physical, see if there's anything that we need to know about, look at the medicines that the patient might be on, if there's any chronic illness, do lab work, see if there are any sexually transmitted diseases that need to be treated, and get her started on the vitamins if she's not already taking prenatal vitamins. And then there are screening tests that can be done early on, like the first trimester screen where they do a sonogram, and some blood work to see if there's a genetic problem with the pregnancy. That can be done between 11 and 13 weeks, which is much earlier than they used to be able to do this type of testing. And then, of course, between 16 and 20 weeks, the MSAFP, which is the rest of the genetic screening that it can't be done earlier. So there are a lot of things that can be done early on in a pregnancy to help the woman achieve the final goal, which is a healthy mom, healthy baby in the end.
How important is antenatal care? Is it just that we doctors like to do it, or does it really benefit the baby and the mum?
Well, there have been some studies that question whether antenatal care is actually worth all the money that we put into it. But I really feel that there is a definite support that can be given to that mother. You were talking about some of the prenatal screenings that early screenings that can be done during pregnancy, and of course our viewers will be listening to that and saying, "And what are you going to do if you find something wrong?" And actually, I remember very clearly diagnosing that a woman was carrying a baby with Down's. But because I was able to tell her, your baby's going to have Down syndrome, she joined the Down Society. And when I delivered that baby, now normally you deliver a baby and it's a Down syndrome. If you didn't know, you sort of, what's going to happen now? But we knew it was going to be a Down baby. And so I was able to give it to her. And she took that baby and she took it to her breast because she had adapted to the thought. So prenatal, pre-birth diagnosis is very, very important in supporting mothers sometimes through difficult situations.
Yes.
And I think that mental support, there's a lot to be said for that.
Yes, it's very, very important. I know that that builds a relationship with the accoucheur, the person who's going to be with them through the delivery. And that's why women get to the point, you know, today's women often miss out on what they used to have when the obstetrician that took them through their antenatal visits and care would be there to deliver them. I used to be there to deliver them. And if I didn't feel like it, my wife said, you can't miss out on Mary, you've got to be there. And so she would drive me to the hospital to go and be there for Mary to have a...
Quite the slave driver.
She was a very wonderful, wonderful woman.
Yeah.
She was the sort of woman that got to know the patient so well that, you know, sometimes you have an unmarried girl or somebody that's just moved to town, there's nobody there, maybe the husband still has to work, and I would just phone up the office and say, Janet, Cynthia's here and there's nobody with her. Would you come over, please, and sit with her? Janet would come over. She knew her well because of the prenatal visits. She would sit there, go through the labor with her. What a wonderful thing. Those relationships make for trust and an easy delivery.
Oh, don't they?
That's beautiful.
I love that story. Well, Sherilyn, we offer our ladies antenatal classes. How important is that?
You know, I think for the woman who has an interest in it, it's really wonderful.
What about the one that doesn't?
There are women who are really not into their pregnancy that much, and they're just, like, I work with a lot of women who are just not there. We have antenatal classes that are available, and not very many of them take advantage of that to learn. And then I have other patients
that are very much
into the pregnancy, and they want to know everything.
And do they do better in labor and...
The women who know more do better.
Mm-hmm.
So we encourage our moms that are not so interested to become interested. And we try to use the time when we see them at their visits to, you know, teach them a little bit here and there so that they can learn, even if they don't come to the classes, that they can kind of be in tune with their body and they can be thinking about breastfeeding and they can be thinking about all these important things that they need to learn about.
Excellent. I like that. Sean, our trainer, is up next, so be ready for some exercise. But first, let's take a look at today's medical news report. In the headlines today, mercury bad, fish good, meat intake linked to teen fat, keep calm and carry on. Are you eating for two? Rates of ADHD amongst 8-year-olds has been found to be related to maternal smoking, lead exposure and mercury levels during pregnancy. As the mercury levels rise, so does the risk of ADHD. Curiously, eating fish at least twice a week seemed to be protective, but large fish such as tuna and swordfish have more mercury and should be avoided, especially in pregnancy. Maternal meat intake and breastfeeding have been found to have a significant impact on levels of fat in adolescents. Mothers who ate meat during pregnancy increased the fat mass of their teens by 1% per portion per day. On the other hand, breastfeeding for the first 4 weeks reduced fat by 14%. So, mothers-to-be, reduce the meat and plan to breastfeed to give your kids an advantage in the battle of the bulge. Anxiety during pregnancy and childbirth increases the risk of complications and interventions for both mother and baby. A new study in Midwifery Journal explored personality traits and how they impacted birthing. Mothers who scored low in extroversion and emotional stability were more likely to have a C-section and to need assistance during labour and birth. So be sure to attend antenatal classes and have a support person with you who will have a calming influence on you in labour. Excessive weight gain in pregnancy is associated with serious complications for both mother and child. An analysis of almost 90 studies by the Women's Health Research Unit in London found that interventions during pregnancy, especially change of diet, along with exercise, are effective. They reduce the risk of preeclampsia, hypertension in pregnancy, and impaction of the fetal shoulder during birth. So ladies, don't eat for two, watch your weight and stay active. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben and that's today's medical news report.
In our current series on Hope Sabbath School, we're looking at the big picture of Scripture, growing in Christ and in the knowledge of our Lord and Savior. We'll be looking from Genesis all the way to Revelation, the big story of God's good plan for each one of our lives. We hope you'll join us for Hope Sabbath School and see what God can do to bless your life.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Here I am with Sean, our trainer. And Sean, what have you got for us today? I like toys. You've got toys again.
I know, right? So we're only going to use one ball today.
Okay.
All right, so we use you as my demonstration partner today.
Okay? Oh, I don't get to be the trainer?
No. Well, you want to be the trainer? So let's start with a little warm-up, all right?
Okay.
Nice wide base. Take a nice deep breath. Inhaling through the nose, exhaling through the mouth. One more time.
Come on, off your sofa. Come on, join us.
There you go. Join us. Come on. Hands up. Take a nice deep breath. And what we're going to do is put the right hand to the left foot. All right?
Okay.
And then we're going to alternate in 3, 2, 1. Go. All the way up. Stretching your hamstring. Stretching out your triceps a little bit. And just take your time. Make sure to breathe as you come up. Take a nice exhale. And 3, 2, 1. What we're going to do is some high knees, all right?
All right.
Just to get warmed up. Go. Again, if you cannot handle the impact, you could just raise your knee up nice and tall. Again, stretching out your glute, as Dr. Narada is doing the more impact version. All right. In 3, 2, 1. All right. We're going to shake it out a little bit. Hopefully the heart rate is up just a little bit. What we're going to do is work a little bit of the core. All right. We're going to use the pink ball today. So I'm going to need you to lay on your back.
Okay.
Please. Great way to work the abdominal area. So Dr. Narada is going to hold the ball. Okay. And the ball is going to go all the way back, never touching the ground.
All right.
Never touching the ground. Simultaneously, her legs are going to be straight out, working the lower part of the abdominal area.
All right.
What you're going to do is do an exchange. Bring the ball up, open your leg, and bring it down. Yes. Never touching down. All right. So we do about 10 reps. Come on. 8. Keep going. 7. So that ball, opening up that chest cavity a little bit, stretching out the abdominal area, bringing the ball all the way back. There you go. Give me 3 more. Breathe. Make sure you're breathing. Do not hold your breath. All right. Give me 2 more. Give me 2 more. Come on. You can do it. You can do it. Don't hold that breath. Huh? There you go. 1 more. So you should feel that stop right there in that position right there because I love
He's going to kill me.
Come on. You can do it. You can do it. Come on. There you go. Right there. So that abdominal area is working the entire time. Okay. Perfect. All right. That was good, actually. Come on. I'll double take the next one just so you get a little break. All right. So that's working the entire abdominal area from your top part to the bottom part of your abs. All right.
All right.
So the second one is using this medicine ball. And we're going to have 1 foot in front of the next, all right? You put this hand here, and we're going to work this oblique here, all right? Just squeezing here. Come all the way out, elongate, stretch that oblique, and then you crunch it. As you come here, you blow out, all right?
Okay.
So I want you to really exaggerate and blow and squeeze that abdominal area. So what you're going to do is lay down.
Woo! I'm going to run away.
So you can see the body has to stabilize, and this leg goes up front here, stabilizing here. All right, work a little bit of your IT band for those who are runners. And then you stretch it out and crunch. Yes, squeezing right in that area. There you go, perfect. So you should feel almost like an accordion. Squeeze, yes. So put the hand right behind the head.
Cool.
There you go. Right there, and crunch. Working that side right there. Now, you want to make sure you could do about maybe 15 reps. Again, you could do 30 seconds or 4 rep. All right, and now just do the opposite side.
Oh, because the other side's going to feel lonely.
Side, yes. So you may find that one side may be a little bit more weaker than the next. Again, this leg.
Woo!
There you go. It's all about stability. Don't fall, because I promise I won't laugh at you. I promise.
I've never seen you not laugh at me before.
There you go. And go ahead. Squeeze. Perfect. So what I want you to do is let's make a little minor adjustment here. Put that hand right back here. And all you're going to do is bring that elbow right over to here. Yes. Perfect. squeezing. So you're going to blow out all the air from your abdominal area in order for you to contract that side even more. Imagine, crunching here with air in your stomach, you really don't get a full contraction. So let's give me two more. One more. Perfect. So that's working your oblique, all right? Perfect. I help you out.
Very good.
And the last but not least is a mountain climber. Now, we've done the mountain climber before, right? Great cardiovascular exercise, just like this. And you can do that for about 30 seconds in between your exercises. But today, we're going to do it.
You're not.
Yes.
You're not.
Oh, yes.
I thought that ball was rolling away for a very good reason.
I think you thought it was a go away ball. All right, hands on the ball. All right. I want you to stand up nice and tall.
Now, if I land on my face, you are not allowed to laugh, because I know he will.
I will not. I'll make sure you're right first, and then I may laugh. So right off the bat, I'm going to hold this ball here, but you're going to see I'm going to back off a little bit, okay? So go ahead. There you go. So the body has to stabilize. Come on, keep going. So if this is too difficult for you, you can press this ball up against a wall, all right?
Oh, yeah.
Still allowing you to do a little bit more core work, but at the same time, getting some cardiovascular, all right?
Wow.
That's a tough, one, yeah.
That was tough.
It is. So that is a mountain climber.
He's getting meaner and meaner.
So that's a great way to take your regular mountain climber and step it up a notch.
All right? Okay, great.
And we'll cool it down a little bit, all right? Three nice exercises. You can do them back to back. Take a nice deep breath at the end and then repeat it again, all right?
Excellent.
Hand up. Blow out, and we're going to go all the way down. All right. Let's go over to the right side. Wrap your right hand around your right ankle. Your hands around your right ankle. And then scale it over opposite side. Okay. And what you can do is come back to the middle and come up nice and slow. There you go.
Great. Thank you, Sean.
Very welcome.
And we've got something really special for people on the next time you're here, right?
Ooh. We do.
You do not want to miss it, and I'm not going to let any secrets out. You just be here. But first, I want to answer some questions shortly, but first, here's another Ageless Advantage, and we'll be right back.
What is the best method of controlling adult-onset diabetes? A 2002 study by the U.S. Diabetes Prevention Program enrolled 3,000 individuals to find out. They tested the advantages of either a popular diabetes drug or an active exercise program of 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. The results showed that the exercise was more effective than the medication. And the results were greatest for the oldest individuals. 30 minutes of exercise a day is another ageless advantage.
You can go to our website at hopetv.org/gohealthy to find all the previous shows and all the recipes that we do on the show. And soon we'll have our exercise segments on there. Again, that's hopetv.org/gohealthy. Also, don't forget to call us live. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Or you can text your questions 301-960-5144. And we have a great offer again for our callers. If you call us now during our live broadcast with a question about a healthy pregnancy, we'll send you this beautiful book for free. So call us now. It's restricted, remember, to viewers of our live show with pregnancy-related questions. Now, I want to thank you for posting your comments and your questions on our Facebook page. And here are some questions that we didn't have a chance to answer on previous shows. And someone says, I'm 69 years old, and how many glasses of water should I have a day? Well, it depends on your weight and on how much you weigh, and your health conditions. So if you had heart failure, I wouldn't want you drinking a lot of water. But if you're pretty healthy and you're normal weight, 6 to 8 glasses a day is very good. More in the hot weather, less in the colder weather. Now, we've had a phone call, and someone left a message. I have arthritis in my thumb. It's hard to pick things up. What do you recommend? Well, you could see a physical therapist. They might be able to give you some devices that would help you with some of those more difficult tasks. But heat can be helpful for arthritic joints. And remember from what we learned the other day, keep it moving. Do some exercise. So get some PT and really work on that thumb. Another phone call. How many people are affected if only one person is smoking in the house? Does it really affect the whole family? Well, I would say that depends on whether they smoke indoors or outdoors. If they're smoking indoors, yes, everybody's getting secondhand and what we call third-hand smoke. If they're just smoking outdoors, it's going to be on their clothes and perhaps some exposure then for the rest of the family. But the more they can limit exposure to the family, the better. Ruby asks, is it okay to eat fruits and vegetables in the same meal? Well, Ruby, depends what you call a vegetable and what you call a fruit. Fruits have seeds inside, and vegetables are generally green and leafy things. So potatoes are tubers, and pumpkins have seeds inside. So those are kind of neutral fruits, the tomatoes, the cucumber, and those are neutral fruits. They're going to go either way, with fruit or with the green leafy vegetables. Some people do have trouble, though, eating sweet fruit and green leafy vegetables in the same meal. So those you might want to keep apart. Thank you for sending your questions. Keep sending them. The number is 855-400-HEALTHY. I'm looking forward to your calls. That's 855-400-4325. But before we go to your questions live, let's take another look at Akyla's story.
Some of the things that I would recommend for a healthy pregnancy would be to drink plenty of fluids, water, if you have to, juices, not carbonated drinks, eating healthfully. Well, I'd also recommend going to bed early, though that is my downfall. It's really important to get good night's sleep. And as any pregnant woman knows, you just get up throughout the night because there's this fetus that's just pressing on your bladder. One of the top ones too is staying active. You know, you may not feel good, but walk a little. Obviously, unless you have a high-risk pregnancy, it's different, you know, in what you can do, but you can stay active, be active. Go out. I mean, I've been out picking blackberries, and we have a membership to a pool that's outdoors, and generally take the kids 2 to 3 times a week. And last week when it was hotter, I think we went every day. I'll do laps for a little bit, and play with my kids. We swim under the water. I mean, I do everything that I would do as if I was not pregnant. Except for I do know that times where I can tell, like, it's too much, and then I stop and just relax. And I think that's important too, is knowing when is it too much, and stopping when it is. But when you eat healthy and live healthfully, it's easier to go back to your pre-pregnancy weight, which most women want. And so it's worth for the few months, you know, to give up any desire for whatever it is that you may be doing in your lifestyle that's not healthful. Just for this child that's in utero, to give it the best possible chance of health, you know, in terms of eating appropriately and drinking and exercising. Some people may say, oh, the impact is little, and it may be little, but like I say, every little step is one step closer to, you know, climbing over the mountain. And you may find that you feel better, you know, in your pregnancy. So I think it's worth it. It's worth it for you. It's worth it for the baby. There are no downsides, really, to living a healthy life.
Really, there are no downsides to living a healthy pregnancy. And a pregnancy, as Akyla says, just lasts for a few months. So to be really focused on your weight for a few months and on the foods that you're eating is well worth it. Tell us, Sharon, what are some good foods, some healthy foods for pregnancy that women perhaps should focus on?
Or well, I loved what you just showed with that sweet potato. And the sweet potato is a bright color. So if you look at the foods that are bright colors, the green leafy foods, the bright orange, the dark grapes, these are foods that are high in nutrition, high in vitamins. You want to stay away from the foods that are, you know, starchy, that are, they'll fill you up, but there's not a lot of nutritional value in them, you know. The high fatty foods, you want to limit those And make sure that you eat plenty of the foods that are high in vitamins. The colors of the rainbow.
So go for the rainbow.
Go for the rainbow.
Are there any foods that we should avoid in pregnancy? You know, when we're thinking about listeria, for example.
I mean, you think about?
Listeria.
Oh, maybe there are some foods that you should avoid, yes.
Like the soft cheeses. And
I think that if you're going to take dairy, then you really have to have it pasteurized at least. And the problem with listeria and listeriosis is that it comes in some of the raw sheep and goat's milk cheeses. And although they may be a little bit better from their fat content as opposed to cow's milk, I think in pregnancy you do well to limit those kind of things.
And you know, it can even be, I just learned very recently, it can even be in hummus, listeria. And so all of those cold, so they're made, they're put in the deli, and then they're stored there. They can all carry the risk of listeriosis, which causes serious miscarriages.
These are not problems of the food. They're not intrinsic problems of the food. They're
problems.
You know, it's the same way as if you take garlic that has been put in oil. The garlic grows in the soil. It's a very good thing, but it may have bacteria from the soil. So we know that when you put garlic into oil, then the oil cuts out the oxygen, so you can get botulinum toxins as well in some of those things. So one has to be very careful that you eat. I tend to advise my patients to eat whole foods, fresh foods, and to eat them in a variety of ways, because I think it's important. Now, mercury, I think you mentioned the mercury content. That's very important. In Canada, where we lived on Lake Ontario, people wouldn't eat fish out of Lake Ontario because the pollution levels of mercury were such that you could become intoxicated with mercury.
That's a very good point. And the placenta magnifies it tenfold. So what small amount mum gets, the fetus gets ten times the amount weight for weight.
Babies do need iron. So your mother needs to focus on iron, green spinach and, you know, Popeye, the sailor man type foods. We need to think about those things for the baby. But sometimes a prenatal supplement makes it so much easier. Not large amounts, but a prenatal supplement sometimes even out.
Some of that folate, the iron,
yes,
the calcium.
Yes, the calcium and so on. Helps a woman to regulate her diet just a little bit easier.
I like that.
The one thing that's important, if a woman is anemic and they have to take something more than a prenatal vitamin, and they take a supplement of iron, to not take that with dairy products, for instance, mm-hmm. because if they take it with dairy products, it will bind and you won't get as much benefit out of it. So,
and they'll absorb more if they take it with vitamin C.
With something that has
vitamin
C. So I always tell my patients, if you're taking iron, take it with something that has vitamin C in it, and that's going to help your absorption, and you're going to get a lot more out of it.
Yes, because putting up with those side effects for no benefit, you know, if you take it with the wrong thing, it's a very sad story.
And the pediatrician in me wants me to say that if this woman has other children around the house, be very careful with your iron supplements and so forth, because if other children come along and think they're Smarties or M&Ms or something like that, you know, iron poisoning in little children is a very serious thing.
Yes, it is. Friends, remember we've got an awesome offer for our callers. If you call us now during our live broadcast and share us your questions about healthy pregnancy, we'll send you a copy of Celebrations, which Dr. Handysides is one of the authors, and it is a beautiful coffee table book with all these gorgeous pictures. So it's free. Remember, pick up your phones, call us now, 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Go healthy for good. We'll be right back after a short break, so stay with us.
When reading The Great Hope, this section really caught my attention. As arrows from the Lord's quiver, the reformer's words pierce their hearts. With whom, think you, are ye contending? With an old man from the brink of the grave? No, with truth. Truth which is stronger than you, and truth that will overcome you. This brings me great hope because it's an excellent example of how John Wycliffe stood for the truth, and he defended that truth to the grave. Even as a person who was very educated in the philosophies of the world, he stood by the truth of the Bible. And this definitely gives me great hope, because no matter what happens in our Christian walk, we know that we can stand by the truth of the Bible.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. We're taking your health questions, especially related to pregnancy. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And remember, our beautiful book is a gift to our callers tonight. So call us now. I have a text question here. What is the impact of pregnancy on a woman's body when comparing a woman who has never had a child to those who have had one or more?
Wow.
So for a first-time mum, is that more of an impact?
Yes, she's going to feel a little stretched. You know, she may get striae, little marks on her stomach. She's going to breastfeed the baby, so she's going to feel changes in her breast. And these are changes that sometimes leave a little evidence of having gone through those changes later on. Many, many women don't mind that, because when they've got that baby, you know, I was reading Proverbs, and it said, there are three things that can never be satisfied. One of them is the grave, but the other one was the barren womb. And, you know, women love to have children. So once they've got that baby, they don't mind a few stretch marks. Yeah.
Good. How long should I wait before having another baby, Sherilyn?
Well, you ought to give your body a break for a year at least. You know, it's nice to have your children close so that they can play together and all of this, but you need a break. You need at least a year.
Right, and the evidence shows 6 months or less really does put you
at an increased risk.
Harm.
Yes.
Yep. So, can I take Benadryl when I'm pregnant?
Well, I don't really, you know, you've asked me a question. I haven't looked that up. I tended to look up medications.
Yes.
I don't think I would like people to take Benadryl, because I'm not sure about it.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm a coffee drinker, but now I'm pregnant. Can I still drink decaf coffee?
You can, but there's still a little bit of caffeine in it. So
yes, it does have.
But it's much better than the full strength.
Yes.
Well, I wouldn't argue with a pregnant woman. A woman that's been drinking coffee and she wants to now go to decaffeinated coffee, this might be a glorious opportunity to wean her off the caffeinated type.
Yes.
And so I would say to her, well, if you take a couple of cups a day, the evidence on coffee, you know, is very backwards and forwards. But if she goes decaf, maybe she'll stay decaf after the pregnancy. Wouldn't that be a good idea?
Yes, it would. So the answer to that is yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what can I do to relieve or prevent symptoms like nausea and vomiting at the beginning of my pregnancy? I'm going to ask that for both of you.
Well, there are several things that you can do. Vitamin B6, 50 milligrams a day, is something that we recommend that patients try, because it's, you know, there's no risk involved. Many times that doesn't work. Sometimes C-bands help. Just the pressure on the wrist tends
to improve.
So
they're little bands that you can wear around your wrist, and it's got a little pressure point there. Yes.
Sometimes eating a saltine cracker before you move very much in the morning, before you get out of bed, some of these things help. But then some women have just severe nausea where they're vomiting all the time. And then we have to get into medications that can help them.
Yeah, that's the whole key. I mean, if it's just a little nausea, they have to hydrate themselves well. Ginger is one of the natural products that has been shown to decrease nausea. And although one likes natural things, I don't think it's been studied in pregnancy. But I think a little ginger
ale. It has, actually. At a lot, and it looks pretty safe.
It looks pretty safe, yeah. Ginger ale, but I don't know what the dose is.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming on the show today. Thank you, Dr. Hansi Sars. Thank you, Sherilyn. It's been great tapping into your minds there. Pregnancy is an exciting time, a time of tremendous change. It may be a normal part of life, but it does require planning and medical supervision. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it needs to be medicalized. However, good health practices before and during pregnancy, along with good antenatal care, are so important for a good outcome. Find yourself an experienced birth attendant, a midwife, and or a doctor. Be sure to deliver in a place that's safe for you and for your baby. Give your little one the best start to be healthy for good. Tomorrow we'll deal with cancer prevention. Thanks for joining us. You've been watching Go Healthy for Good.